Eric. I glanced over at him, realizing how stupid that would sound to one of the Fangtasia Fangbangers. Eric was certainly one of the handsomest males I'd ever seen. He was strong, intelligent, and fantastic in bed. Right now, there lay a frosty silence between that strong, intelligent, lusty man and me, and that silence lasted until we parked. It was hard to find a spot, which made Eric even more pissed off. That wasn't hard to tell. Since Eric had been summoned, it would have been polite to have reserved him a parking spot by the front door, or given him the green light to come in by the back entrance. There was also the unavoidable lesson in pictures that Vampire's Kiss was so busy it was hard to find a parking spot. Ouch. I struggled to push aside my own worries. I needed to concentrate on the troubles we were about to face. Victor didn't like or trust Eric, and the feeling was mutual. Since Victor had been put in charge of Louisiana, Eric's position as the only holdover from the Sophie Ann era had become increasingly precarious. I was pretty sure I'd gotten to continue my life unmolested only because Eric had hoodwinked me into marrying him in the eyes of the vampires. Eric, his mouth pressed into a thin line, came around to open my door. I could tell he was using the maneuver as a way to scan the parking lot for danger. He stood in such a way that his body was between me and the club, and as I swung my legs out of the town car, he asked, "Who's in the parking lot, lover?" I stood, slowly and carefully, my eyes closed to concentrate. I put my hand over his where it rested on the door frame. In the warm night, with a light wind gently riffling my hair, I sent my extra sense out. "A couple having sex in a car 2 rows away," I whispered. "A man thrown up behind the black pickup on the other side of the parking lot. 2 couples just pulling in an Escalade. 1 vampire by the door to the club. Another vampire closing fast." When vamps go on alert, there's no mistaking it. Eric's fangs ran out, his body tensed, and he whirled to look outward. Pam said, "Master." She stepped out of the shadow of a big SUV. Eric relaxed, and so, gradually, did I. Whatever had made the two fight at my house, it had been put aside for the evening.
"I came ahead as you bid me," she murmured,
the night wind picking up her voice and tossing it. Her face looked oddly dark. "Pam, step into the light," I said. She did, though certainly she was not obliged to obey me. The darkness under Pam's white skin was the result of a beating. Vampires don't bruise exactly like we do, and they heal quickly, but when they've been hit hard, you can tell it for a little while.
"What happened to you?" Eric asked.
His voice was completely empty, which I knew was an awfully bad thing.
"I told the door guards that I needed to come in to make sure Victor knew you were arriving, an excuse to make sure that the interior was secure. They prevented you."
"Yes." A little breeze had sprung up, dancing the night air across the smelly parking lot. The breeze picked up my hair and blew it around my face. Eric had his tied at the nape of his neck, but Pam reached up to hold hers back. Eric had wished Victor dead for months, and I was sorry to say I felt the same. It wasn't only Eric's worry and anger that I was channeling. I myself understood how much better life would be for us if Victor was gone. I'd come so far from what I'd been. At moments like this, I was both sad and relieved that I could think about Victor's death not only without qualms, but with positive zeal. My determination to survive and to ensure the survival of those I loved was stronger than the religion I'd always held so dear.
"We have to go in or they'll send someone after us," Eric said finally,
and we walked to the main door in silence. All we needed was a badass theme song playing in the background, something ominous and cool, with a lot of drums, to indicate the visiting vampires and their human sidekick walk into a trap.
However, the club's music was out of sync with our little drama. Hips Don't Lie was not exactly badass music. We passed a bearded man hosing down the gravel close to the door. I could still spot dark patches of blood. Pam snorted. "Not mine," she muttered. The vampire on duty at the door was a sturdy brunette wearing a studded leather collar and a leather bustier with a tutu, I swear to God, and motorcycle boots. Only the frilly skirt looked out of character.
"Sheriff Eric," she said in heavily accented English. "I am Anna Lyudmila. I welcome you to Vampire's Kiss."
She didn't even glance at Pam, much less me. I pretty much expected her to ignore me, but her disregard of Pam was an insult, especially since Pam had already had an encounter with the club personnel. This behavior was the kind of trigger that could send Pam over the edge, which I figured might be the plan. If Pam went ballistic, the new vamps would have a legitimate reason to kill her. The target on Eric's back would assume large proportions. Naturally, I wouldn't even be a factor in their thinking because they couldn't imagine what a human could do against their vampire strength and speed. And since I wasn't Superwoman, they might be right. I wasn't sure how many of the vampires knew I wasn't wholly human, or how much they'd care even if they knew I was a fraction fairy. It wasn't like I'd ever exhibited any fairy powers. My value lay in my telepathic talent and my connection to Niall. Since Niall had left this world for the world of the Fae, I had expected that value to decrease accordingly. But Niall might choose to return to the human world any moment, and I was Eric's wife by vampire right. So Niall would side with Eric in an open conflict. At least that was my best bet. With fairies, who knew? It was time to assert myself. I laid my hand on Pam's shoulder and patted her. It was like patting a rock. I smiled at Anna Lyudmila.
"Hi," I said, perky as a cheerleader on uppers. "I'm Suki. I'm married to Eric. I guess you didn't know that. And this is Pam, Eric's child and his strong right arm. I guess you didn't know that either, 'cause otherwise not greeting us appropriately is just plain rude."
I beamed at her. Looking as though I were forcing her to swallow a live frog, Anna Lyudmila said,
"Welcome, human wife of Eric and revered fighter Pam. I apologize for failing to offer you a suitable greeting."
Pam was staring at Anna Lyudmila as if she were wondering how long it would take to pull Anna's eyelashes out one by one. I bumped Pam's shoulder with my fist, buddy-buddy.
"We're cool, Anna Lyudmila," I said. "It's all good here."
Pam switched her stare to me, and it was all I could do not to flinch. To add to the tension, Eric was doing a good imitation of a big white rock. I gave him a very laden look. Anna Lyudmila couldn't have beaten Pam up. She didn't have the juice. Besides, she looked okay, and I was completely sure that if someone had laid a hand on Pam, that vampire would show the after effect. After a second, Eric said,
"I think your master is waiting for us."
His tone was one of gentle chiding. He made sure his massive self-control was evident. If Anna Lyudmila could have blushed, I think she would have.
"Yes, of course," she said. "Luis, Antonio?"
Two young men, dark-headed and brawny, materialized out of the crowd. They were wearing leather shorts and boots. Period.
Okay, a different look for Vampire's Kiss workers.
I'd assumed Anna Lyudmila was following her own fashion genie, but apparently all the vamps on duty had to wear sort of caveman sex slave outfits. At least, I assumed that was the look they were going for. Luis, the taller of the two, said,
"Follow us, please,"
in accented English. His nipples were pierced, which was something I'd never seen before, and naturally I found myself wanting to take a closer look. But in my book, it was basically bad taste to stare at someone's assets, no matter how much on display they were. Antonio couldn't hide the fact that Pam had made an impression on him, but that wouldn't stop him from killing us if Victor ordered him to do so.
We followed the bondage Bobsey twins across the crowded dance floor.
Those leather shorts were an adventure from behind, let me tell you. And the pictures of Elvis decorating the walls were an education, too. It wasn't often you ran into a bondage, Elvis, whorehouse-themed vampire club.
Pam was admiring the decor, too, but not with her normal sardonic amusement. There seemed to be a lot going on in Pam's head.
How are your three friends? She asked Antonio. The ones who prevented me from entering.
He smiled in a tight sort of way, and I had the feeling the injured vampires hadn't been his favorites.
They're taking blood from donors in the back, he said. I think Pearl's arm has healed.
As he preceded me through the noisy room, Eric was evaluating the club in a series of casual glances. It was important to him that he seem at ease, as if he were quite sure that his boss meant him no harm. I could tell that through our bond. Since no one cared about me, I was free to look where I wished, though I hoped I was doing it with a suitably careless air. There were at least 20 bloodsuckers in Vampire's Kiss, more than Eric ever had in Fantasia at one time. There were also a lot of humans. I didn't know what the capacity of the building was, but I was pretty sure it had been exceeded. Eric reached behind him, and I took his cool hand. He tugged me forward, wrapped his left arm around my shoulders, and Pam closed in from the rear. We were at DEFCON 4, Orange Alert, or whatever came right before the blow-up. The tension vibrated through Eric like a plucked guitar string. And then we spotted its source. Victor was sitting at the back in a kind of corral for VIPs. It was lined with a huge square red velvet banquette, before which was centered the usual low table. It was littered with little evening purses and half-empty drinks and dollar bills. Victor was definitely the centerpiece of the grouping, his arms around the young man and woman flanking him. The tableau was a poster of what conservative humans feared most, the corrupt vampire seducing the youth of America, inducting them into orgies of bisexuality and blood-sucking. I looked from one breather to the other. Though one was male and one female, they were otherwise startlingly the same. Dipping into their heads, I quickly learned both were using drugs, both were over 21, and both were experienced sexually. I felt a little sad for them, but I knew I couldn't be responsible. Though they had yet to realize it, they were only props for Victor. Their position suited their vanity. There was another human in the corral, a young woman seated by herself. She was wearing a white dress with a full skirt and her brown eyes fixed on Pam with desperation. The woman was clearly horrified at the company she was keeping. A minute before, I would have bet that Pam couldn't get any more angry or miserable than she'd been, but I would have been wrong.
Miriam, Pam whispered. Oh, Jesus Christ, Shepherd of Judea.
This was the woman Pam wanted to turn, the woman she wanted to become her child. Miriam had to be the sickest woman I'd ever seen who wasn't in a hospital. But her light brown hair was puffed out in a party style, and she'd been made up, though the cosmetics stood out on a face so pale even her lips looked white. Eric's face didn't show anything, but I could feel him scrambling, struggling to keep his face still and his thoughts clear. Several points to Victor for an amazing ambush. Luis and Antonio, having delivered us, positioned themselves at the opening to the VIP corral. I didn't know if they were there to keep us in or to keep other people out. We were further protected by stand-up cardboard figures of Elvis, at least life-sized. I wasn't impressed. I'd met the real thing. Victor greeted us with a wonderful smile, white and toothy, as brilliant as a game show host's.
Eric, how good to see you in my new enterprise. Do you like the decor?
He made his hand flow to indicate the whole crowded club. Though Victor was not a tall man, he was clearly the king of the castle, and he was devouring every minute of it.
He leaned forward to pick up his drink from the low table. Even the glass was dramatic, dark, smoky, fluted. It fit in with the decor that made Victor so proud. I would have called it, if I ever got a chance to describe it to someone else, which at this point seemed pretty unlikely, early bordello. Lots of dark wood, flocked wallpaper, leather, and red velvet. It looked heavy and florid to me. Possibly I was prejudiced. The people gyrating on the dance floor seemed to be enjoying Vampire's Kiss no matter how it was decorated. The band was a vampire band, so they were great. They'd play a current song, then they'd do a more bluesy rock number. Since the band members could have played with Robert Johnson and Memphis Minnie, they'd had several decades to practice.
I'm amazed, Eric said in a completely uninflected voice.
Pardon my bad manners. Please have a seat, Victor said. My companions are... Your name, sweetness?
He asked the girl.
I'm Mindy Simpson, she said with a coquettish smile. This is my husband, Mark Simpson.
Eric acknowledged them with a flick of the eye. Pam and I hadn't even entered into the conversational game yet, so we didn't have to respond. Victor didn't introduce the pale young woman. He was clearly saving the best for last.
I see you have your dear wife with you,
Victor said as we newcomers moved to sit on the long banquette to Victor's right. It wasn't as comfortable as I'd hoped it would be, and the depth of the seat didn't agree with the length of my legs. The life-size cutout of Elvis to my right was wearing the famous white jumpsuit. Classy.
Yeah, I'm here, I said dismally.
And your famous second, Pam Ravenscroft,
Victor continued, as if he were identifying us for a hidden microphone. I squeezed Eric's hand. He couldn't read my mind, which, just at this moment, I felt was a pity. There was a lot going on here we didn't know about. In vampire eyes, as Eric's human wife, I pretty much ranked as his number one designated concubine. The wife title gave me status and protection, theoretically rendering me untouchable by other vampires and their servants. I wasn't exactly proud of being a second-class citizen, but once I'd understood why Eric had tricked me into the relationship, I'd gradually reconciled myself to the title. Now it was time to offer Eric a little support in return.
How long has Vampire's Kiss been open?
I beamed at the loathsome Victor. I'd had years of experience in looking happy when I wasn't, and I was the queen of chit-chat.
You didn't see all my advance publicity? Only 3 weeks, but so far it's been quite the success,
Victor said, his eyes barely brushing me. He was not interested in me as a person, not at all. He wasn't even interested in me sexually. Believe me, I know the signs. He was far more interested in me as a creature whose death would wound Eric. In other words, my absence would be more effective than my presence. Since he was deigning to talk to me, I thought I'd take advantage of it.
Do you spend a lot of time here? I'm surprised they don't need you in New Orleans more often.
Snap. I waited for his answer, smiling steadily.
Sophie Ann saw fit to remain permanently based in New Orleans, but I see my rule as more of a floating government,
Victor said genially.
I like to keep a firm hand on all that goes on in Louisiana, especially since I find I am simply a regent holding the state for Felipe, my dear king.
His grin became positively ferocious.
My felicitations on becoming regent,
Eric said, as though nothing could be more desirable. There was a lot of pretending going on in this building. So many undercurrents, you could drown in them, and we just might.
You're very welcome,
Victor said savagely.
Yes, Felipe has decreed I should style myself regent. It's so unusual for a king to have amassed as many territories as Felipe has, and he's taken his time deciding what to do. He's decided to keep all the titles for himself.
And will you be regent of Arkansas, too? Pam asked. At the sound of Pam's voice, Miriam Ernest began to cry. She was managing to be as quiet about it as a woman can be, but no weeping is silent. Pam did not look in Miriam's direction.
No,
Victor said, biting out the word.
Red Rita has been given that honor.
I didn't have any idea who Red Rita might be, but both Eric and Pam seemed impressed.
She's a great fighter, Eric told me. A strong vampire. She's a good choice to rebuild Arkansas.
Great. Maybe we could go live there. Though I couldn't read vampire minds, I didn't have to. All you had to do was watch Victor's face to understand that Victor had wanted, yearned for, the title of king, that he had hoped to rule both of Felipe's new territories. His disappointment had made him angry, and he was focusing that anger on Eric, the biggest target within his reach. Provoking Eric and intruding on his territory would not be enough for Victor. And that was why Miriam was sitting in the club tonight. I tried to get inside her head. When I carefully felt around the edges, I met with a sort of white fog. She was drugged, though I didn't know what sort of drugs she'd taken, or whether she'd been willing or coerced.
Yes, of course, Victor said,
and I pulled myself back into the here and now with a jerk. While I'd zoned out in Miriam's head, the vampires had stayed on the topic of Red Rita.
While she's settling in next door, I thought it would be appropriate to build up the area of Louisiana that abuts her territory. I opened the human place and this one.
Victor was practically purring. You own Vic's Redneck Roadhouse, I said numbly. Of course. I should have known. Was Victor compiling reasons for me to want him dead? Naturally, economics should have nothing to do with life and death, but all too often the two were definitely linked.
Yes,
Victor said, grinning at me. He was just as merry as a department store Santa.
You've been by?
He replaced his glass on the table. Nope, too busy, I said.
But I heard business at Merlot's has fallen off.
Victor tried a look of faux concern on for size, discarded it.
If you need a job, Sookie, I'll put in a good word with my manager at the Redneck Roadhouse, unless you prefer to work here. Wouldn't that be fun?
I had to take a deep breath. There was a long moment's silence. For that moment, everything hung in the balance. With an amazing control, Eric spackled his rage away behind a wall, at least temporarily. He said,
Sookie is well suited where she works now, Victor. If she were not, she would come to live with me and perhaps work at Fantasia. She is a modern American woman and used to supporting herself.
Eric said this as if he were proud of my independence, though I knew that wasn't the case. He really couldn't understand why I persisted in keeping my job.
While I'm discussing my female associates, Pam tells me that you disciplined her. It's not customary to discipline a sheriff's second. Surely that should be left for her master to do.
Eric allowed his voice to have a slight edge.
You weren't here, Victor protested smoothly, and she showed my doorman great disrespect by insisting she should come inside before you did for a security check, as if we would permit anything in our club to threaten our most powerful sheriff. Did you have business you wanted to discuss?
Eric said.
Not that it isn't wonderful seeing what you've done here. However,
he let his voice trail off, as if he were simply too polite to say, I have better fish to fry.
Of course. Thanks for reminding me,
Victor said. He leaned forward to pick up the smoky gray-stemmed glass, refilled by a server so that it was brimming with dark red liquid.
I'm sorry, I haven't offered you a drink yet. Some blood for you, Eric? Pam?
Pam had taken advantage of their conversation to glance at Miriam, who looked as though she were going to keel over any second and maybe not get up again. Pam pulled her eyes away from the young woman and concentrated on Victor.
She shook her head mutely.
Thank you for the offer, Victor, Eric began, but I know you'll raise a glass with me. The law prevents me from offering you a drink from Mindy or Mark since they're not registered donors, and I'm all about being law-abiding.
He smiled at Mindy and Mark, who grinned back. Idiots.
Sookie, what will you have?
Eric and Pam were obliged to accept the offer of synthetic blood, but because I was only a human, I was allowed to insist I wasn't thirsty. If he'd offered me country fried steak and fried green tomatoes, I would have said I wasn't hungry. Luis beckoned to one of the servers, and the man vanished to reappear with some true blood. The bottles were on a large tray, along with the dark, fancy stemware matching Victor's.
I'm sure the bottles don't appeal to your aesthetic sense, Victor said. They offend me.
Like all the servers, the man who brought the drinks was human, a handsome guy in a leather loincloth, even smaller than Luis's leather shorts, and high boots. A sort of rosette pinned to his loincloth read, Colton. His eyes were a startling gray. When he placed the tray on the table and unloaded it, he was thinking about someone named Chick or Chico, and when he met my eyes directly, he thought,
Fairy blood on the glasses. Don't let your vamps drink.
I looked at him for a long moment. He knew about me. Now I knew something about him. He'd heard about my ability, common knowledge in the supernatural community, and he'd believed in it. Colton cast his eyes down. Eric twisted the cap to unseal the bottle, lifted it to pour the contents into the glass.
No,
I said to him. We couldn't communicate telepathically, but I sent a wave of negativity, and I prayed he'd pick up on it.
I have nothing against American packaging, as you do,
Eric said smoothly, raising the bottle directly to his lips. Pam followed suit. A flicker of vexation crossed Victor's face so quickly I might have imagined it if I hadn't been watching him so intently. The gray-eyed server backed away.
Have you seen your great-grandfather recently, Sookie?
Victor said, as if he were saying, gotcha. There was no point pretending ignorance about my fairy connection. Not in the past couple of weeks, I said cautiously.
But you have two of your kind living in your house.
This was not classified information, and I was pretty sure Eric's new vampire Heidi had told Victor. Heidi really didn't have a choice, which was the downside to having living human relatives whom you still loved. Yes, my cousin and my great uncle are staying with me for a while. I was proud that I managed to sound almost bored.
I wondered if you might be able to give me some insight into the state of fairy politics, Victor said smoothly.
Mindy Simpson, tired of conversations that didn't include her, began pouting. She was unwise. Not me. I stay away from politics, I told Victor.
Truly? Even after your ordeal?
Yep, even after my ordeal, I said flatly. I really, really wanted to talk about my abduction and mutilation. Great party conversation.
I'm just not a political animal.
But an animal, Victor said smoothly. There was a moment's frozen silence. However, I was determined that if Eric died trying to kill this vampire, it wasn't going to be for an insult to me.
That's me, I said, returning his smile with interest.
Hot-blooded, breathing. I could even lactate. The whole mammal package. Victor's eyes narrowed. Maybe I'd gone too far.
Did we have anything further to discuss, Regent? Pam asked,
rightly guessing Eric was too angry to speak.
I'll be glad to stay as late as you want, or as long as my words please you, but I am due to work at Fantasia tonight, and my master Eric has a meeting to attend. And apparently my friend Miriam is the worse for wear tonight, and I'll take her home with me to sleep it off.
Victor looked at the pallid woman as if he were only just now noticing her.
Oh, do you know her?
He asked negligently.
Yes, I believe someone mentioned that. Eric, is this the woman you told me Pam wanted to bring over? I'm so sorry I had to say no, since by my reckoning she may not have too long to live.
Pam didn't move. She didn't even twitch.
You may go,
Victor said, overdoing the off-handed air.
Since I've given you the news about my regency and you've seen my beautiful club. Oh, I'm thinking of opening a tattoo establishment and maybe a lawyer's office, though my man for that post has to study modern law. He received his law degree in Paris in the 1800s.
Victor's indulgent smile faded completely.
You know that as regent, I have the right to open a business in anyone's sheriffdom. All the money from the new clubs will come directly to me. I hope your revenues don't suffer too much, Eric.
Not at all,
Eric said. I didn't think that actually had any meaning.
We're all a part of your turf, master.
If his voice had been laundry, it would have flapped in the wind. It was so dry and empty. We rose, more or less as one, and dipped our heads to Victor. He waved a dismissive hand at us and bent to kiss Mindy Simpson. Mark huddled closer on the vampire's other side to nuzzle Victor's shoulder. Pam went over to Miriam Ernest and bent over the girl to put her arm around her and help her to rise. Once on her feet and supported by Pam, Miriam focused on making it out the door. Her mind might be clouded, but her eyes were screaming. We left the club in grim silence, at least as far as our own conversation went. The music just never let up, escorted by Luis and Antonio. The brothers bypassed sturdy Anna Ludmilla to follow us out into the parking lot, which surprised me. When we had filed through the first row of cars, Eric turned to face them. Not coincidentally, the bulk of an escalade blocked the view between Anna Ludmilla and our little party.
Do you two have something to say to me?
He asked very softly. As if she suddenly understood she was out of Vampire's Kiss, Miriam gasped and began crying, and Pam took her in her arms.
It wasn't our idea, Sheriff,
said Antonio, the shorter of the two. His oiled abs gleamed under the parking lot lights. Luis said,
We're loyal to Felipe, our true king, but Victor is not easy to serve. It was a bad night for us when we were dispatched to Louisiana to serve him. Now that Bruno and Corinna have disappeared, he hasn't found anyone to take their places. No strong lieutenant. He's traveling constantly, trying to keep his eye on every corner of Louisiana.
Luis shook his head.
We're badly overextended. He needs to settle in New Orleans, building back up the vampire structure there. We don't need to be trailing around in leather, scarcely covering our asses, draining the income from your club. Having the available income is not good economics, and the startup costs were steep.
If you're trying to lure me into betraying my new master, you've picked the wrong vampire,
Eric said, and I tried not to let my mouth hang open. I thought it was Christmas in June when Luis and Antonio revealed their discontent, but obviously I hadn't been thinking deviously enough. Again. Pam said,
Leather shorts are attractive compared to the black synthetics I have to wear.
She was holding up Miriam, but she didn't look at her or refer to her, as if she wanted everyone else to forget the girl was there. Her costume complaint was not out of character, but it was irrelevant. Pam had always been nothing if not on task. Antonio gave her a look of disillusioned disgust.
You were supposed to be so fierce,
he muttered. He looked at Eric.
And you were supposed to be so bold.
He and Luis turned and strode back into the club. After that, Pam and Eric began to move with speed, as if we had a deadline to get off the property. Pam simply picked up Miriam and hurried to Eric's car. He opened the back door, and she got her girlfriend in and slid in after her.
Seeing that haste was the order of the night, I climbed into the front passenger seat and buckled up in silence. I looked back to see that Miriam had passed out the minute she realized she was safe. As the car left the parking lot, Pam began sniggering and Eric grinned broadly. I was too startled to ask them what was funny.
"Victor just can't restrain himself," Pam said, making the show of my poor Miriam.
And then the priceless offer from the Leather Twins.
"Did you see Antonio's face?"
Pam demanded.
"Honestly, I haven't had so much fun since I flashed my fangs at that old woman who complained about the color I painted my house."
"That'll give them something to think about,"
Eric said. He glanced over at me, his fangs glistening.
"That was a good moment. I can't believe he thought we'd fall for that."
"What if Antonio and Luis were sincere?" I asked. "What if Victor had taken Miriam's blood or brought her over himself?" I twisted in my seat to look back at Pam. She was looking at me almost with pity, as if I were a hopeless romantic.
"He couldn't," she said. "He had her in a public place. She has lots of human relatives, and he has to know I'd kill him if he did that."
"Not if you were dead first," I said. Eric and Pam didn't seem to have my own respect for Victor's lethal tactics. They seemed almost insanely cocky. "And why are you both so sure that Antonio and Luis were making all that up just to see how you'd react?"
"If they meant what they said, they'll approach us again," Eric said bluntly. "They have no other recourse. If they've tried Felipe and he's turned them down, I suspect he has."
"Tell me, lover, what was the problem with the drinks?"
"The problem was that he'd rubbed the inside of the glasses with fairy blood," I said. "The human server, the guy with the gray eyes, gave me the tip-off." And the smiles vanished as if they'd been turned off with a switch. I had a moment of unpleasant satisfaction. Pure fairy blood is intoxicating to vampires. There's no telling what Pam or Eric would have done if they'd drunk from those glasses. And they'd have gulped it down as quickly as they could, because the smell is just as entrancing as the actual substance. As poisoning attempts went, this one was subtle.
"I don't think that amount could have caused us to behave in an uncontrollable way," Pam said, but she didn't sound so confident.
Eric raised his blonde eyebrows.
"It was a cautious experiment," he said thoughtfully. "We might have attacked anyone in the club, or we might have gone for Sookie, since she has that interesting streak of fairy. We would have made public fools of ourselves in any case. We might have been arrested. It was an excellent thing that you stopped us, Sookie."
"I have my uses," I said, suppressing the jolt of fear that the idea of Eric and Pam going fairy struck on me evinced.
"And you're Eric's wife,"
Pam observed quietly. Eric glared at her in the rearview mirror. The silence that fell was so thick, I wished I'd had a knife. This Pam and Eric secret quarrel was both upsetting and frustrating, and that was the understatement of the year.
"Is there something you want to tell me?"
I asked, frightened of the answer. But anything was better than not knowing.
"Eric got a letter,"
Pam began, and before I could register that he'd moved, Eric had whipped around, reached over the seat, and seized her throat. Since he was still driving, I squawked in terror.
"How's it head, Eric? Not with the fighting again," I said. "Look, just go on and tell me."
With his right hand, Eric was still holding Pam in a grip that would have choked her if she'd been a breather. He was steering with his left hand, and we coasted to a stop on the side of the road. I couldn't see any oncoming traffic, and there were no lights behind us either. I didn't know if the isolation made me feel good or bad. Eric looked back at his child, and his eyes were so bright they were practically throwing sparks. He said,
"Pam, don't speak. That's an order. Sookie, leave this be."
I could have said several things. I could have said, "I'm not your vassal and I'll say what I want to say." Or I could have said, "Fuck you, let me out," and called my brother to come get me. But I sat in silence.
I am ashamed to say that at that moment, I was scared of Eric. This desperate and determined vampire who was attacking his best friend because he didn't want me to know something. Through the tie I felt with him, I got a confused bundle of negative emotions. Fear, anger, grim resolve, frustration. Take me home, I said. In an eerie echo, the limp Miriam whispered, take me home. After a long moment, Eric let go of Pam, who collapsed in the back seat like a sack of rice. She hunched over Miriam protectively. In a frozen silence, Eric took me back to my house. There was no further mention of the sex we'd been scheduled to have after this fun evening. At that point, I would rather have had sex with Luis and Antonio, or Pam. I said goodbye to Pam and Miriam, got out, and walked into my house without a backward glance. I guess Eric and Pam and Miriam drove back to Shreveport together, and I guess at some point he permitted Pam to speak again, but I don't know. I couldn't sleep after I'd washed my face and hung up the pretty dress. I hoped I'd get to wear it on a happier evening, sometime in the future. I'd looked too good to be this miserable. I wondered if Eric would have handled the evening with such sang-froid if it had been me Victor had captured and drugged and put out there on that banquette for the entire world to gape at. And there was another thing troubling me. Here's what I would have asked Eric if he hadn't been playing dictator. I would have said, where did Victor get the fairy blood? That's what I would have asked. Chapter 4. I rose the next day feeling pretty grim in general, but I brightened when I saw that Claude and Dermot had returned to the house the night before. The evidence was clear. Claude's shirt was tossed over the back of a kitchen chair, and Dermot's shoes were at the foot of the stairs. Plus, after I'd had my coffee and my shower and emerged from my room in shorts and a green t-shirt, the two were waiting for me in the living room. Good morning, guys, I said. Even to my own ears, I didn't sound too perky. Did you remember that today was the day the antiques dealers come? They should be here in an hour or two. I braced myself for the talk we had to have.
Good, then this room will not look like a junk shop,
Claude said in his charming way. I just nodded. Today we had obnoxious Claude, as opposed to the more rarely seen tolerable Claude.
We did promise you a talk, Dermot said.
And then you didn't come home that night. I sat back in an old rocker from the attic. I didn't feel particularly ready for this conversation, but I was also anxious for some answers.
Things were happening at the club,
Claude said evasively. Uh-huh. Let me guess. One of the fairies is missing. That made them sit up and take notice.
What? How did you know?
Dermot recovered first. Victor has him, or her, I added. I told them the story about last night.
It's not enough that we have to handle our own racist problems, Claude said. Now we're sucked into the fucking vampire struggles, too.
No, I said, feeling I was walking uphill in this conversation. You, as a group, weren't sucked into the vampire struggles. One of you was taken for a specific purpose. Different scenario. Let me point out that at the very least, that fairy who was taken has been bled, because that was what the vampires needed, the blood. I'm not saying your missing comrade couldn't be alive, but you know how the vamps lose control when a fairy is around, much less a bleeding fairy.
She's right, Dermot told Claude. Kate must be dead. Are any of the fairies at the club her kin? We need to ask if they've had a death vision.
A female,
Claude said. His handsome face was set in stone.
One we couldn't afford to lose. Yes, we have to find out.
For a second, I was confused, because Claude didn't think that much about women in terms of his personal life. Then I remembered that there were fewer and fewer female fairies. I didn't know about the rest of the Fae, but it seemed the fairies were on the wane. It wasn't that I lacked concern about the missing Kate, though I didn't think there was a snowball's chance in hell that she was alive, but I had other selfish questions to ask, and I was not going to be diverted. As soon as Dermot had called Hooligans and asked Belenos to call the Fae together to ask about Kate's kin, I got back on my own track. While Belenos is busy, you have some free time, and since the appraisers are coming soon, I really need you to answer my questions, I said. Dermot and Claude looked at each other. Dermot seemed to lose the conversational coin toss because he took a deep breath and began.
You know when one of your Caucasians marries one of your Negroes, sometimes the babies turn out looking much more like one race than another, seemingly at random. That likeness can vary even between children of the same couple.
Yes, I said. I've heard that.
When Jason was a baby, our great-grandfather Niall checked on him.
I felt my mouth drop open. Wait, I said, and it came out in a hoarse croak. Niall said he couldn't visit because his half-human son Fintan guarded us from him, that Fintan was actually our grandfather.
This is why Fintan guarded you from the Fae. He didn't want his father interfering in your lives the way he had interfered in his own. But Niall had his ways, and nonetheless, he found that the essential spark had passed Jason by. He became uninterested, Claude said.
I waited. He continued.
That's why he took so many years to make your acquaintance. He could have evaded Fintan, but he assumed you would be the same as Jason, attractive to humans and supernaturals, but other than that, essentially a normal human.
But then he heard you weren't, Dermot said.
Heard? From who? Whom? My grandmother would have been proud.
From Eric. They had a few business dealings together, and Niall thought to ask Eric to alert him to events in your life. Eric would tell Niall from time to time what you were up to. There came a time when Eric thought you needed the protection of your great-grandfather, and of course, you were withering.
Huh?
So Grandfather sent Claudine, and then when she grew worried she couldn't take care of you, he decided to meet you himself. Eric arranged that, too. I suppose he thought that he would get Niall's goodwill as kind of a finder's fee.
Dermot shrugged.
That seems to have worked for Eric. Vampires are all venal and selfish.
The words pot and kettle popped into my mind. I said, so Niall appeared in my life and made himself known to me via Eric's intervention, and that precipitated the fairy war because the water fairies didn't want any more contact with humans, much less a minor royal who was 1/8 human. Thanks, guys. I loved hearing that a whole war was my fault.
Yes, Claude said judiciously. That's a fair summary. And so the war came, and after many deaths, Niall made the decision to seal off Fairy.
He sighed heavily.
I was left outside, and Dermot too.
And by the way, I'm not withering, I pointed out with some sharpness. I mean, do I look withered to you? I knew I was ignoring the big picture, but I was getting angry, or maybe even angrier.
You have only a little Fae blood,
Dermot said gently, as if that would be a crushing reminder.
You are aging.
I couldn't deny that. So why am I feeling more and more like one of you, if I have such a little dab of fairy in me?
Our sum is more than our parts, Dermot said. I'm half human, but the longer I'm with Claude, the stronger my magic is. Claude, though a full-blooded fairy, has been in the human world for so long, he was getting weak. Now he's stronger. You only have a dash of fae blood, but the longer you're with us, the more prominent an element it is in your nature.
Like priming a pump? I said doubtfully. I don't get it.
Like washing a new red garment with the whites, said Dermot triumphantly,
who had done that very thing the week before.
Everyone in our house had pink socks now. But wouldn't that mean Claude was getting less red? I mean, less fey, if we're absorbing some of his?
No, Claude said with some complacence. I'm redder than I was.
Dermot nodded.
Me too.
I haven't really noticed any difference, I said.
Are you not stronger than you were?
Well, yeah, some days. It wasn't like ingesting vampire blood, which would give you increased strength for an indeterminate period if it didn't make you batshit crazy. It was more like I felt increased vigor. I felt, in fact, younger. And since I was only in my 20s, that was just unnerving.
Don't you long to see Niall again? Claude asked.
Sometimes. Every day.
Are you not happy when we sleep in the bed with you?
Yeah, but just so you know, I think it's kind of creepy, too.
Humans, Claude said to Dermot, with a blend of exasperation and patronage in his voice.
Dermot shrugged. After all, he was half-human. And yet you chose to stay here, I said.
I wonder every day if I made a mistake.
Why are you two still here if you're so nuts about Niall and your life in Faerie? How did you get the letter from Niall that you gave me a month ago, the one where he told me he'd used all his influence to make the FBI leave me alone? I glared at them suspiciously. Was that letter a forgery?
No, it was genuine, Dermot said, and we're here because we both love and fear our prince.
Okay, I said, ready to change subjects because I couldn't get into a debate about their feelings. What's a portal exactly?
It's a thin place in the membrane,
Claude said.
I looked at Claude blankly and he elaborated. There's a sort of magical membrane between our world, the supernatural world, and yours. At a thin place, that membrane is permeable. The Fey world is accessible, as are the parts of your world that are normally invisible to you.
Huh?
Claude was on a roll.
Portals usually stay in the same vicinity, though they may shift a little. We use them to get from your world to ours. At the site of the portal in your woods, Niall left an aperture.
The slit isn't big enough for one of us to pass through standing up, but objects can be transferred.
Like a mail slot in a door. See? Was that so hard? I said. Can you think of some more honest things to tell me?
Like what?
Like why all those fae are at hooligans, acting as strippers and bouncers and whatnot. They're not all fairies. I don't even know what they are. Why would they end up with you two?
Because they have nowhere else to go,
Dermot said simply.
They were all shut out. Some on purpose, like Claude, and some not, like me.
So Niall closed off access to Faerie and left some of his people outside?
Yes. He was trying to keep all those fairies who still wanted to kill humans inside, and he was too hasty,
Claude said. I noticed that Dermot, whom Niall had bespelled in a cruel way, looked dubious at this explanation. I understood that Niall had good reasons for closing the Fae off, I said slowly. He said experience had taught him that there's always trouble when fairies and humans mix. He didn't want the fairies to crossbreed with humans anymore because so many of the Fae hate the consequence, half-breeds. I looked apologetically at Dermot, who shrugged. He was used to it. Niall never intended to see me again. Are you two really so anxious to go into the world of the Fae and stay there? There was a pause that might be called pregnant. It was clear that Dermot and Claude weren't going to respond. At least they weren't going to lie. So explain why you're living with me and what you want from me, I said, hoping they'd answer that one.
We're living with you because it seemed like a good idea to be with the kin we could find, Claude said. We felt weak, cut off from our homeland, and we had no notion that there were so many Fae left out here. We were surprised when the other stranded Fae in North America began to arrive at hooligans, but we were happy. As we told you, we're stronger when we're together.
Are you telling me the whole truth?
I got up and began pacing back and forth. You could have told me all this before, and you didn't. Maybe you're lying. I held out my arms to either side, palms up. Well?
What?
Claude looked affronted. Well, it was about time I served him up what he'd been dishing out.
Fairies don't lie. Everyone knows that.
Right. Sure. Common knowledge on the street. You may not lie, but you don't always tell the whole truth, I pointed out. You certainly have that in common with vampires. Maybe you have some other reason for being here? Maybe you want to be around to see who comes through the portal? Dermot shot to his feet. Now we were all three angry, all three agitated. The room was full of accusation.
I want to get back into Faerie because I want to see Niall once more,
Claude said, picking his words.
He's my grandfather. I'm tired of receiving the occasional message. I want to visit our sacred places where I can be close to my sister's spirits. I want to come and go between the worlds as is my right. This is the closest portal. You're our closest relative. And there's something about this house. We belong here, for now.
Dermot went to look out the front window at the warm morning. There were butterflies outside and blooming things and lots of gorgeous sunshine. I felt a wave of intense longing to be outside with things I understood rather than in here, engaged in this bizarre conversation with relatives I didn't understand or wholly trust. If reading his body language was a reliable gauge, Dermot seemed to share the same mixed and unhappy feelings. I'll think about what you've said, I told Claude. Dermot's shoulders seemed to relax just a hair. I have something else on my mind, too. I told you about the firebombing at the bar. Dermot turned around and leaned against the open window. Though his hair was longer than my brother's and his expression was more, sorry, Jason, intelligent, it was scary how much they looked alike. Not by any means identical, but they could certainly be mistaken for one another, at least briefly. But there were darker tones in Dermot than I'd ever seen in Jason. Both the fairies nodded when I mentioned the firebombing. They looked interested but uninvolved, a look I was used to seeing from vampires. They didn't really care a whole hell of a bunch about what happened to humans they didn't know. If they'd ever read John Donne, they would have disagreed with his idea that no man is an island. Most humans were on one big island to the fairies, and that island was adrift on a sea called I Totally Don't Care. People talk in bars, so I'm sure they talk in strip clubs. Please let me know if you hear anything about who did it. This is important to me. If you could ask the staff at Hooligans to listen for talk about the bombing, I'd sure appreciate it. Dermot said,
Is business bad at Sam's, Sookie?
Yes, I said, not completely surprised at this turn of conversation. And the new bar up off the highway is making inroads into our clientele. I don't know if it's the novelty of Vic's Redneck Roadhouse and Vampire's Kiss pulling people away, or if folks are turned off because Sam's a shifter, but it's not going so good at Merlot's. I was trying to decide how much I wanted to tell them about Victor and his evilness when Claude suddenly said,
You'd be out of a job,
and closed his mouth, as if that had sparked a chain of thoughts. Everyone was mighty interested in what I'd be doing if Merlot's closed. Sam would be out of his living, I pointed out as I half turned to go to the kitchen to get another cup of coffee. Which is way more important than my job. I can find another place to work.
He could run a bar somewhere else,
Claude said, shrugging. He'd have to leave Bon Ton, I said sharply.
That wouldn't suit you, would it?
Claude looked thoughtful in a way that made me distinctly uneasy. He's my best friend, I said. You know that. Maybe that was the first time I had said that aloud, but I guess I'd known it for quite a while. Oh, by the way, if you want to know what happened to Kate, you might try contacting a human guy with gray eyes who works at Vampire's Kiss. The name on his uniform was Colton. I knew some places just handed out name tags every night with without any worries about who actually owned the name, but at least it was a start. I started back to the kitchen.
Wait,
Dermot said, so abruptly that I turned my head to look at him.
When are the antiques people coming to look at your junk?
Should be here in a couple hours, Dermot said.
The attic is more or less empty. Didn't you plan to clean it?
That's what I was thinking of doing this morning.
Do you want us to help?
Dermot asked. Claude was clearly appalled. He glared at Dermot. We were back on more familiar ground, and I, for one, was grateful. Until I'd had a chance to think all this new information through, I couldn't even guess at the right questions to ask. Thanks, I said. It would be great if you could carry up one of the big garbage cans. Then, after I sweep and pick up all the bits and pieces, you could tote it down. Having relatives who are superhumanly strong can be very handy. I went to the back porch to gather up my cleaning supplies, and when I trudged upstairs with laden arms, I saw that Claude's door was closed. My previous tenant, Amelia, had turned one upstairs bedroom into a pretty little boudoir with a cheap but cute dressing table, chest of drawers, and bed. Amelia had used another bedroom as her living room, complete with two comfortable chairs, a television, and a large desk, which now stood empty. The day we'd cleaned out the attic, I'd noticed that Dermot had set up a cot in the former living room. Before I'd had time to say Jack Robinson, Dermot appeared at the attic door carrying the garbage can. He set it down and looked around him.
I think it looked better with the family things in it,
he said, and I had to agree. In the daylight streaming through the filthy windows, the attic looked sad and shabby. It'll be fine when it's clean, I said with determination, and I set to with the broom, sweeping down all the cobwebs, and then started in on the dust and debris on the planks of the floor. To my surprise, Dermot picked up a few rags and the glass cleaner and began to work on the windows. It seemed wiser not to comment. After Dermot finished the windows, he held the dustpan while I swept the accumulated dirt into it. When we'd completed that task and I'd brought up the vacuum to take care of the last of the dust, he said,
"These walls need paint."
That was like saying the desert needs water. Maybe there had once been paint, but it had long ago chipped or worn away, and the indeterminate color remaining on the walls had been scuffed and stained by the many items leaning against them. "Well, yes. Sanding and painting. The floor needs it, too." I tapped with my foot. My forebears had gone crazy with whitewash when the second story had been added to the house.
"You'll only need part of this space for storage," Dermot said out of the blue, "assuming the antiques dealers buy the larger pieces and you don't move them back up here."
"That's true." Dermot seemed to have a point, but it was lost on me. "What are you saying?" I asked bluntly.
"You could make a third bedroom up here if you only used that end as your storage," Dermot said. "See, that part?"
He was pointing to a place where the slope of the roof formed a natural area, about 7 feet deep and the width of the house.
"It wouldn't be hard to partition that off, hang some doors," my great-uncle said.
Dermot knew how to hang doors?
I must have looked astonished because he told me, "I've been watching HGTV on Amelia's television."
"Oh," I said, trying to think of a more intelligent remark. I still felt at sea. "Well, we could do that, but I don't think I need another room. I mean, who's going to want to live here?"
"Aren't more bedrooms always a good thing? On the television, the hosts say they are, and I could move into such a room. Claude and I share the television room as a sitting room. We would each have our own room."
I felt humiliated that I had never thought of asking if Dermot minded sharing a room with Claude. Obviously he did. Sleeping on a cot in the little sitting room, I'd been a bad hostess. I looked at Dermot with more attention than I'd given him before. He had sounded hopeful. Maybe my new tenant was underemployed. I realized that I didn't know exactly what Dermot did at the club. I'd taken it for granted that he'd leave with Claude when Claude went to Monroe, but I'd never been curious enough to ask what Dermot did when he got there.
What if being part fairy was the only thing he had in common with the self-centered Claude?
If you think you have the time to do the work, I'd be glad to buy the materials, I said, not quite sure where the words came from. In fact, if you could sand, prime, and paint the whole thing and build the partition, I'd sure appreciate it. I'd be glad to pay you for the job. Why don't we go to the lumberyard in Clarice on my next day off, if you could figure out how much lumber and paint we need?
Dermot lit up like a Christmas tree.
I can try, and I know how to rent a sander, he said. You trust me to do this?
I do, I said. Not sure I really meant that. But after all, what could make the attic look worse than it did now? I began to feel enthusiastic myself. It would be great to have this room redone. You need to tell me what you think would be a fair wage.
Absolutely not, he said. You have given me a home and the reassurance of your presence. This is the least I can do for you.
I couldn't argue with Dermot when he put it that way. There's such a thing as being too determined not to accept a gift, and I assessed this as just such a situation. This had been a morning chock full of information and surprises. As I was washing my hands and face to get rid of the attic dust, I heard a car coming up the driveway. The Splendid logo in Gothic lettering filled the side of a big white van. Brenda Hesterman and her partner climbed out. The partner was a small, compact man wearing khakis and a blue polo shirt and polished loafers. His salt and pepper hair was clipped short. I went out onto the front porch.
Hello, Sookie,
Brenda called, as if we were old friends.
This is Donald Calloway, the co-owner of the shop.
Mr. Calloway, I said, nodding. You two come on in. Can I get y'all a drink? They both declined on their way up the steps. Once inside, they looked around the crowded room with an appreciation my fairy guests hadn't shown.
Love the wooden ceiling, Brenda said, and look at the plank walls.
It's an old one, Donald Calloway said. Congratulations, Miss Stackhouse, on living in such a lovely, historic home.
I tried not to look as astonished as I felt. This was not the reaction I normally got. Most people tended to pity me for living in such an outdated structure. The floors weren't really true, and the windows weren't standard. Thanks, I said doubtfully. Well, here's the stuff that was in the attic. Y'all see if there's anything you want. Just give me a yell if you need something. There didn't seem to be any point in hanging around, and it seemed kind of tacky to watch them at work. I went into my room to dust and straighten, and I cleaned out a drawer or two while I was at it. Normally, I would have listened to the radio, but I wanted to keep an ear out for the partners in case they needed to ask questions. They talked to each other quietly from time to time, and I found myself curious about what they were deciding. When I heard Claude coming down the stairs, I thought it was a good idea to go out to tell him and Dermot goodbye as they left. Brenda gaped at the two beautiful men as the fairies passed through the living room. I made them slow down long enough to be introduced because that was only polite. I wasn't a bit surprised to notice that Donald was thinking of me in a different light after he'd met my cousins. I was scrubbing on the hall bathroom floor when I heard Donald exclaim. I drifted into the living room, trying to look casually inquisitive. He'd been examining my grandfather's desk, a very heavy and ugly object that had been the cause of much cursing and sweating on the part of the fairies when they carried it down to the living room. The small man was crouched before it now, his head in the knee hole.
"You've got a secret compartment, Miss Stackhouse,"
he said, and he inched backward on his haunches.
"Come, let me show you."
I squatted down beside him, feeling the excitement such a discovery naturally aroused. Secret compartment, pirate treasure, magic trick. They all trigger the happy anticipation of childhood. With the help of Donald's flashlight, I saw that at the back of the desk, in an area where your knees would fit,